Hello and welcome to the Hull Libraries podcast. I'm Katie.
And I'm Dan.
In this episode, we had a chat with children's author extraordinaire Michelle Robinson, writer of over 40 books full of all sorts of colourful characters, with titles like The Day the Banana Went Bad, When Jelly Had a Wobble, and There's a Line in My Cornflakes. She's got more coming out all the time, so make sure to check out her website over at michellerobinson.co.uk for more information and to see what a busy bee she is.
We talked to Michelle about inspiration, tips for staying creative, as well as what it's like to become a successful author after dreaming of it for so long, even from a very young age. But more than any of that, Michelle is a very fun and engaging human being who is always a pleasure to talk and listen to, whatever the subject happens to be. So plonk yourself on the sofa or pop on your walking shoes and enjoy our chat with the wonderful Michelle Robinson.
I can see you in your lovely room with lots of books around you at the back, so that's nice to see.
Yes, it's nice and colourful because I've been doing lots of these virtual visits and things with schools now. So I think it's actually, there's a benefit to that because they actually get to see where a writer works.
Yeah, see real life where you create things and yeah.
Exactly, and there are pluses to all of this. Of course, they don't usually see that when you visit a school. You just sort of suddenly appear in their classroom. So this way they actually get to come to me, which has been quite nice. So it means I have to keep it tidy.
I know, that's the thing. And it's great if you're nosy, you can get to see everybody's houses and what they do, what they look like.
So much fun. It shows us actually how similar we all are, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I think it's been good actually for people to just see a bit of real life as well. Like everybody's got stuff,
a little bit of chaos
and a bit of chaos behind them, and that's okay. Chaos is good, I think, in a balanced way. So Hull Libraries have been really lucky to have you in the past. So in 2020 you were our World Book Day book that we used around the city. Can you explain a bit more about that and how it worked?
Yes. Oh, I had the best time coming up and seeing you all. Yes, we toured, didn't we? Lots of schools with The Day the Banana Went Bad. And I was just made to feel so welcome. I had the best time. We must have seen hundreds of children in all kinds of different schools in all different areas. And yeah, I shared the story with them, told them a bit about being a writer, hopefully got them just as enthused as you guys at the libraries do about reading and about books and literacy, but not in a dry, boring way, just like you guys do. You bring books and reading to life, and you just make them fun and active and accessible. And that's what I'm all about too, really. So whenever I visit schools, I feel like I'm not representing just me and my stories. I feel like I'm representing what we do, what libraries do, what bookshops do, what publishers do, what illustrators and authors do, what parents and grown-ups do, trying to get kids passionate and excited about reading. So I'm always very conscious when I go to schools or libraries or with schools library services, I'm there supporting the teachers and the other grown-ups really, and just trying to be a kind of a manifestation of the love of reading. I can't help myself, as you know, I love reading, and so my events are quite energetic, they're very fun, they're very upbeat, because I just love it. I'm the luckiest, happiest person in the world. So if I'm dressed as a banana mucking about with Joyce in front of all the school children, and I just couldn't be happier.
Well, this is what I was going to touch on, because your delivery of how you tell your stories is so interactive and so fun and a bit like a performance. And you actually dressed as a banana.
I do dress as a banana. Not for the whole thing. It's a very hot costume. But yes, I find it's just fun. Basically, when I'm talking to very young children, as any grown-up who's ever tried reading a story with a very young, energetic child will know, they need to get the wriggles out. They need to be active as well. And a lot of children find the staticness of being read to can be a little bit limiting, actually. So whenever I know I'm going to share a story with young children, I always get them getting the wriggles out first. So I put on this banana costume and I tell them who we're going to meet in the story, which is Bad Banana, who's this guy who's told that he's bad. He's not as good as the other bananas because he's a bit bumped and bruised. And we do the banana dance. Everyone gets on their feet and we peel like a banana and we go around and chop an apple and stuff like that. And it just means that we've been physical. We've got some energy out before we have to sit nicely and listen, but also we're kind of anticipating a story. We are ready. We want to meet this banana. So yeah, it works really well for me. I've been doing this for 10 years now. So I've read a lot of stories to a lot of small children, and you know, I just find that the more engaging, you're right, it's a performance. You do have to perform. You can't just sit there and read a story and then be done and then go, because then you're just embodying actually reading being placid. And if they haven't been completely captivated by the words off the page, you've lost them. So I write specifically to perform as well. I try and write books that when a grown-up reads them with a child, they are that hero for 5 minutes. And hopefully there's lots of fun in the pages. There's lots of feelings that you can explore. There's things where you can guess what happens next or what might have happened if it had ended differently and things like that. So actually the brilliant part of performing is it also informs what I write for my next book. And I'm thinking, what will this be like to read aloud? Where will the joy be in this? Where's the action? Where are the feelings? Where's the fun?
Yeah, you've got your perfect audience because you get such good feedback from children. They will tell you exactly what they think about it, and you can kind of trial out what works and what doesn't as well, can't you?
Definitely. It's the best fun, and you learn very quickly. You know, they are, like you said, they're very honest critics. They can't hide things. They can't dress things up. If they're not enjoying something, if they don't understand something, if the logic in a book seems wrong to them, you'll know about it. So it really does inform what you do for the next thing. And actually, as a writer, that's what's really exciting for me, is I know all the books I've got coming out, because of course they take about 3 years from writing for it to actually come to the shelf. I know all my best stuff is still to come, which is amazing.
Yeah, and in libraries, we love that role of storytelling. So I've done that for years, going around the schools and storytelling and getting into the character. And that's why I can relate to you and understand the performance, because you do start going into the characters of the different in the book. And what I like about picture books are they're so fun and interactive, but they've got an underlying message or moral or something to tell the children about. And they can touch on really difficult things in a really good way.
I always feel, I've started working with a charity called Empathy Lab, who are all about feelings and using books to explore feelings. And it's been amazing for me to work with them and to actually really think about feelings in books, because I always think of myself as being very, very guarded with my feelings. So as much as I'll tell the next person, you should talk about your feelings, don't bottle them up, I'm an absolute bottler. And what I found, and I find it really interesting, is a lot of these bigger themes and worries that I have, I explore them in my books without even realizing I'm doing it. So the bad banana who's worried about how he looks and on the outside and being judged. Well, I had this massive operation a few years ago. I had an ileostomy, so I've had my entire large bowel removed and I wear a pouch and, you know, my small intestine protrudes from my abdomen. And I was thinking, well, actually, when I look about it, when I look back on Bad Banana now, I think, well, actually, that's a lot about how I felt and how I feel about being different on the outside, or being perceived to be different, or even feeling myself that I'm different and I'm not good enough in some way. And it's really amazing how these feelings come out even without necessarily looking directly at them. And you're right, when they're in a picture book and when they're about a banana, children can safely look at those feelings because they're looking at it in terms of a banana or somebody else. It's just one step removed. So even if they are about something really awful, grief or death or loss, fear, bullying, anything like that, any really, really big issues, they're sort of safely contained. So they can still be quite raw and they can still be very real when you're feeling them, but you're not being asked about your own feelings directly. And so I think that just makes them this brilliant, safe place to explore things.
Explore and talk and get a conversation started, neither with other children, because I always say don't pigeonhole picture books for young children, because there's a lot of picture books that are of a level where you can actually talk to older children and use that book as a way in.
Absolutely, definitely. I don't think we ever grow out of picture books personally, and I think they can always be certainly part of the mix. There is absolutely nothing wrong in enjoying a good picture book at any age if it's a quality picture book. And also when you consider just the art alone, yeah. Never mind the story. I mean, every single spread is a work of art. You would go to a gallery to look at this stuff, and here you have 32 spreads of phenomenal art. And it's a wonderful way as well for children who are interested. Actually, forget any feelings for a minute. Just think about the art and the artistry and the types of art that we enjoy looking at. It's a great way for you to explore your tastes and the things that you like. But to go back to feelings, what picture books do brilliantly is you can just look at the expressions on faces. You can study the body language. And that's something you can do with older children and younger children. And you've got this whole wealth of different feelings, different moods that you can just pick apart. You can take any one spread and study it in a completely different way. There are just, like you said, there's so many levels in any one picture book. It's phenomenal. So yeah, I'm very, very lucky. I get paired with amazing illustrators by my publishers, and I've worked with some of the best. So I'm a very lucky author indeed.
And for them to pick up the message and the feeling and what that character should look like, it has to be a really good relationship, I guess, between the author and the illustrator.
I think so. It's weird. Back in the old days when I started out, the publishers were very keen to keep you apart. They didn't really like you interacting, because it's the editor's job to tell the illustrator what they should be doing. And it's very odd, because it should be collaborative. The best creative partnerships are collaborative, and you're in a room together and you get to sort of all go in one direction or tug each other in different directions and grow because of it. But I always feel like I like to give the illustrator as much space to do their own thing with it as possible. I always feel like I don't want to tell them this is what the character looks like. So quite often I won't even stipulate whether my characters are human or not, unless it really matters. I'll just say, or whether they're boys or girls, I don't necessarily give them names. So I just think that's completely up to them. You know, if I said, it is a small rhinoceros, it is male, it is wearing this, that and the other, and it's about yay high and it wears glasses or whatever, I'd feel like I was holding their wrist and saying, draw it like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't want anyone doing that to me when I'm writing. So I try to not do that to them when they're illustrating. So I will only ever stipulate if something's really, really vital. I'll say, you know, this bit needs to be a whatever it might be. But yeah, I try and keep my oar out.
And where do you get your ideas from? Did they pop in your head, or have you got a book with all doodles and do you jot things down as you go along?
I do keep notebooks. Here's mine. I'll show you. I know it's a podcast, but yeah, I do write in notebooks. I love writing in notebooks and jotting things down.
That's a very neat notebook. So Michelle's just shown me a lovely notebook with all these gorgeous little drawings and very neat writing. I think my notebook would look like a spider's gone across it, because I just quickly like jot everything down.
Sometimes mine look like that. I have doodles, you know, I doodle, I turn the page sideways and I write through the lines. It just sort of frees me up.
Rebel.
Mostly I type if I'm properly writing, but if I'm sort of daydreaming, I might doodle. I have lots of ideas, which probably sounds greedy, but actually it's just from conditioning. It's from writing every day. So before I was an author, I was a copywriter. So I used to work in advertising agencies. So my job as a creative was to go into work every day for 8, actually usually more like 12, 14 hours, we were really long days, just coming up with ideas, idea after idea after idea, and also getting rejected all the time, because most of those ideas would get thrown out by someone very rude, constantly. So what you do when you're having to do that day in, day out, you become an ideas machine. Like that part of my brain is probably the bit of my body that gets the most exercise. So I'm really good at generating ideas. I'm also really good at kind of sifting through them very quickly and rejecting the ones that aren't particularly strong or aren't going to go anywhere. So for me, that bit's really easy. I say that. A strong caveat with there are days when nothing's coming. But my bigger problem is having the time to work on them all. you know, I sometimes think if I could just have an idea shop. So all these people who get asked where their ideas come from, they could come from the Michelle Robinson idea shop. I go, well, I'm not going to do this one, but you can have it if you want. Yeah, so ideas for me is not the problem. It can be a problem if I'm sad or I'm not living enough. I think, you know, to get ideas out, you do need to be living. You need to have a wide open mind. You have to be get out and about quite a lot. Sometimes you have to put your pen and paper down. You have to observe people. You have to observe life. You've got to feed. You know, it's like having an appetite. Your writing, that writing part of your brain needs input. So you've got to keep putting stuff in. You've got to have experiences. You've got to notice how other people are.
So let's go back to the very start. So you've mentioned your copyright job, but before that, did you enjoy writing from a young age? Where did you start off in your career? How did you get into it?
I always loved writing, even before I could actually write. So even before I knew my alphabet, I wanted to write. Don't particularly know why. I think I thought that writing and being able to read gave you the same sort of power as adults, you know, so bills would come through the door and it would trigger arguments in my house, but I didn't really know why. And I couldn't understand what they were or what the sort of power that they held. And I was young in the early 80s when, you know, like big shoulder pads were in and everyone on telly was wearing big power suits and carrying a briefcase full of papers. So I thought that I really wanted a briefcase full of papers and then I would understand everything. So I really wanted to be able to read and write. I know it probably sounds really silly, but I thought, well, that's what makes you grown up. That's what then gives you sort of autonomy. That's what enables you to make decisions and to be in control and to stop being bossed around or having the wool pulled over your eyes. So I wanted to be able to read and write. And I would fill whole notepads and drawing books and stuff with squiggly lines that I thought looked like writing. It sort of just looked like little rows of seagulls. And then I'd show them to my mum and dad and go, look, I've written a book, like this entire book of squiggles. And actually looking back on it, I mean, they'd get really cross with me for wasting paper, but it wasn't a waste of paper. Whenever you put pen to paper, you're doing something. And I knew what I was writing about. I knew what was contained within those squiggles because I'd had the whole thing in my imagination. It was about a girl on a horse or whatever. It just happened to look like jibber jabber. So yeah, I did. I always wanted to write. And I remember reading these books called The Garden Gang. They were like little ladybird book sized books. And they were awful, really. They were by a girl, allegedly, who was nine. And there was a photo of her on the back. She's called Jane something. And I thought, if she can do it, surely I can do it. And it really inspired me. I thought, well, anyone can, right? So yeah, I just wanted to be able to, I guess, to wield that power. Not in a mwahaha way, but just, you know, to not have any secrets kept from me. I thought, if I can read everything, nothing's a secret.
And did you go to university? Did you get a degree in writing or anything?
So I'm from a working class family. I grew up in rural Gloucestershire. My mum's one of 10. So I've got 20 something cousins. It's an amazingly big family. And I think only three of us, I think, have been to university. I was the first person in my family in ever, I think, to go to university. And I remember in school, I didn't even know what university was, genuinely. So all this talk started happening about UCAS, and all my friends were getting really excited about where they were going to go to university and being in halls of residence. And I was just picturing like these big dormitories. I had no idea what university was. So of course, I got this UCAS book. It's just this big alphabetical book of like all the things you can study. So I basically got to A and thought, this all sounds amazing. It's like, I can be an architect. I can be in advertising. I can be an astronaut. So it just sounded amazing. So I did my best and I got my results. I was going to do teaching and then I changed my mind at the last minute and thought, what am I doing? I want to do something creative. And I ended up doing creative advertising. So it was A in the book. I didn't get very far. And I went to Bournemouth University and studied this, you know, what people were saying was a Mickey Mouse degree. And I suppose it was really. I studied how to be a creative in an advertising agency for 3 years. And that's what I did. I again, even at university, the main thrust of our day was going into the studio, having ideas all day. And so that's what I did. And I'm glad I did, because actually it kickstarted what I'm doing now. And the thing about adverts is they're really bite-sized. So you have to set up an idea, you have to give it personality, and you have to resolve it in a satisfying way in hardly any words at all. And that's what picture books are. So that was the perfect grounding for me. So yeah, I'm glad I did what I did, even if it's a roundabout strange way of getting where I am. I wouldn't be here if I hadn't.
And your creative process, so I imagine you get sat down, you've got a new book to write, you've got a blank piece of paper or a blank screen. Where do you start? What do you do?
So my creative process is I sit and I write. That sounds really odd, but that is literally what I do. So usually straight into my laptop, I've usually got a title, usually start from a title, but not always. Certainly got an idea, a strong idea. And I literally just sit and start to write. So I put word after word. And that's when I'm sort of trying to wrestle as I first start putting a story down. Is it rhyming or not? You know, or is it in prose? What way is it trying to write itself? Where does it start? Who's telling it? And that can take me quite a few attempts. So lots of stories that I have written straight into my laptop, I might have like 30 versions of them easily, completely different versions where I've started, stopped, saved it just in case I want to go back to that version, started a complete different one from a different perspective, or, you know, in a different tone of voice or whatever it may be, or jumping in at a different point in the plot. I just sit and write. And then sometimes what I'll do once I've got a first draft, so my story is at least complete, it might not be perfect, but it's got a beginning and a middle and an end, then I might start looking at it from different perspectives. So particularly with my longer books, I'll think about the plot and where my plot points are falling. And is there anything that I've maybe missed out? Or is there any bit that needs beefing up a bit? Or does the order need changing and things like that? So, and then I might even, once I really get into the editing, particularly in my longer stories, again, I'll do an edit where I'm sweeping through for a particular character and I'm checking on them. Or I'll do one where I'm checking on humour and I'm thinking, right, let's just make sure that's working. Or I'll do one where I'm thinking, right, well, how's the tension? And do a whole sweep of the entire draft with one particular thing in mind. When I'm writing a picture book, they're generally sort of three pieces of A4 long. That's, you know, written into a computer, double space. It's about three pages if you printed it out. Whereas a longer chapter book, it's more like 100, if not more, pages of dense text. And there's just so many threads and bits and bobs that you have to remember. And for me, because I'm still quite new to that, that can easily overwhelm me. So I just find if I can be methodical and think, right, okay, this time I'm checking for this, this time I'm checking for that, it helps me to feel a little bit less overwhelmed by all the different things I'm meant to be keeping an eye on. Whereas with a picture book, when you've only got, you know, 300, 400 words, it's really easy to keep the entire thing in your head, actually. You don't really even need to print it out. It's just there. So you can really usually more clearly see if there's a duff note sounding somewhere in there that's not quite ringing true. You can usually put your finger on it, but in 18,000, 20,000 words, that's a lot harder.
Are you quite disciplined in the sense that you stop looking at it, you know it's finished? Are you a type of writer where you just can't help yourself going back?
I'm more impatient, actually. So I'm more sort of, can't I just be done? I think I'm done. I'll send it to my agent. I'm sure it's done.
It's absolutely fine.
Yeah, when maybe I should have sat on it for a couple of weeks longer. But I'm always so excited when I've written something that I'm pleased with, that I want somebody to look at it, because that's why we write. You know, we write to be read. And it does me no good at all having something sit on my laptop or sit on a bit of paper or in a notebook. It wants to be read. So I'm terrible. Once I think something's as good as I can get it, I will share it. So I'm like, please, somebody tell me I'm a good girl. Somebody pat me on the head. It's pathetic. It's really pathetic. But I think that's what drives us as writers and creative people. You know, you're creating something for other people. You know, you have some kind of audience in mind, or at least you have in mind that it will find an audience and that it will bring joy. So yeah, I'm terribly impatient from that perspective. So rather than tinker, I'd just rather be done and on to the next idea.
So who has been your biggest influence for your writing?
Oh, probably for writing at all and for pursuing the dream and not giving up, my dad, definitely, as he just always said, if you want to do something and you work hard enough and you believe in yourself, you can do it. But the things worth having and worth achieving are hard work, you know, but it's so just keep slogging. So him. And then really, I'm trying to think who some of my favourite authors are. I love Edward Lear. I love Edward Lear's poetry. I love A.A. Milne. I love Dr. Seuss. I loved Roald Dahl growing up. And now I love looking sort of across the shelves at all the new stuff that's coming out. You know, we can't always look backwards.
Yeah, there's some amazing things though, isn't there? Amazing stories and writers.
It's brilliant. And that really keeps you on your toes. And you sort of, you don't want to look sideways on the shelf too often because you don't want it to influence what you're doing. But equally, it's really important because that's the world our children are growing up in now is such a different one to the one I grew up in. End of. We've been through a digital revolution. They don't want to read just William. They don't want to read Enid Blyton. They might occasionally, from a curious sort of perspective about looking back, they want to read about children who inhabit their world or characters that inhabit their world, albeit in a fantastical, invented world, but characters who have the kind of sort of situations going on that they can recognise. So it's really important to look at what new writers are doing as well. So there's lots of people that I really, really admire and I'm loving seeing what they're coming up with. And it, yeah, keeps you going. I need to outdo that person or try. At least try.
Yeah. If you had any advice or top tips for people that are heading into this career, what would it be?
Ooh, believe that you can do it, because if I can, you can. You know, I recognise that I had some privilege in that I'm white and that will have helped open doors because the doors will have automatically been open. But I did come from a background where, you know, a family who weren't educated, didn't understand, didn't come from any money. I just slogged it. Believe you can do it. Get on and do it. That's the main thing. I think so many people who want to be writers and who are writers don't write. We spend loads of time thinking about it. I did this to start with, bought loads of textbooks that sat on my shelf. I sort of read the introductions and they made me feel better. It's like this safety blanket around me. Write. The only way you'll ever get there is by writing. And the only way you will get better. So even if you do get there, if you want to break onto the shelves and you manage, in which case, good on you, well done. You're not going to stay there if you don't keep going. So even though I've got new books coming out all the time, lucky me, I've still got to be working on the next one. So keep writing. And that's really, for me, that's the joy in writing, is I'm learning more about myself with every single book I write. I'm getting better with every single book I write. I still make mistakes all the time. Some of the stories I come up with won't get published because they're not right. They're either not good enough or they're not right for the market. That's absolutely fine. They're all part of my sort of development. And every single book that comes out, if you could see all the work that went into it, if all that stuff got published with it, every single book would be absolutely massive. So just keep going and read new stuff. Don't just look backwards.
And I guess working a big part of your job is also doing lots of school visits, isn't it, where you can talk to children about this and they're fascinated about your background, how you got into it, and they can actually meet you and talk to you. And for Hull, you've just recently this year been author of the month for our Hull Schools Library Service. So I heard you did lots of school visits. How did that go?
It was brilliant. Yes, we did a different follow-up to the day the banana went bad, actually, the one that got published, which is when Jelly had a wobble.
Brilliant, so brilliant time.
Yeah, it's really good fun. And we've got another one coming as well, when Cucumber lost his cool. That's out in summer 2021. So, and actually there's more coming after that. We've got When Ice Cream Had a Meltdown. So,
see, the titles made me laugh before I even read the story.
Well, Tom Knight does the illustrations, of course, and they're so fun. They're really bright, they're really colourful. They're sort of cute and yet they're kind of gritty too. I love his characters. You know, they wear their hearts on their sleeves. So if someone's feeling grumpy in one of these books, if someone's feeling angry or disgruntled or fed up, you see it, or worried in the case of Jelly having a wobble. So yes, I visited lots of classrooms online and we met Jelly and got to learn about anxiety really and how it feels to sort of feel perhaps again a bit sort of maybe left out. So Jelly doesn't like being in a crowd and he doesn't think he's anybody's favourite and he's just sort of an introvert really. He'd rather stay at the back. Good luck to everybody else, but I'll keep myself to myself. Actually, I'm a little bit shy, and I think lots of children can relate to that. And even if the scariest thing they've had to do is stand up in class, maybe show and tell, or maybe they've done something like a nativity play or a concert or something like that, it's so nerve-wracking. I mean, I still get nervous. I've done thousands of events standing up in front of, you know, sometimes a whole assembly room or whatever it is full of children. I still get really, like, bit of me just thinks, oh my goodness, what am I doing? It's like jumping off a cliff every time. So I know how they must feel, and Jelly's just a brilliant way of sort of exploring how wobbly we can feel when we've got, you know, when something's expected of us, or where we, when just when we feel like we're being scrutinized.
For adults as well, I think that's what children find comforting, is adults feel wobbly and many times.
Exactly. I think this grown-ups are, we're sort of looked to have all the answers. And I know certainly in lockdown, that's why I wrote a book called The World Made a Rainbow. I don't know whether you saw that one, but I needed a grown-up to tell me everything was going to be all right. I've needed that more than ever this year. I haven't felt like a grown-up at all. Internally, I've felt completely just like we all know, everyone's felt like it. Where are the answers coming from? Where's the precedent for this, where we can know categorically it's going to be all right? It's not been there. So I think, I think we've all needed a bit of reassurance that it's all right to feel wobbly. And it's been quite hard as an adult, you know, as a parent, excuse me, to be able to say to my children confidently, it's going to be okay, when actually I can't give them any answers about when it's going to be okay or how it's going to be okay. It's taken an enormous leap of faith and an enormous amount of I don't know what bravery.
It's been that reassuring role, isn't it, and thinking your side and self, are we going to be okay, but just telling your kids that we'll be okay. Yeah, I've done the same.
And being able to do that with integrity and honesty too. So being able to say, I'm really sorry, but actually I don't know, but I am old enough to know that things usually work out okay. And I am old enough to know that there are lots of brilliant people, lots of brilliant key workers, lots of brilliant scientists who do have some of the answers. Just because I don't know them, it doesn't mean that they're not coming. We all feel wobbles, don't we?
Yeah, definitely. It's a brilliant idea for books, and the way that you, as we said before, that you cover these areas in your stories that we can all relate to. It's lovely for a parent. I can imagine, you know, them being able to sit on a night and talk to them about feeling anxious and scared and using that book as a way in. I think it's brilliant.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope that's it. You know, you can look at Jelly and you can talk about, how do you think Jelly felt? How do you think he must feel standing in front of all these people? Poor thing, he thinks nobody likes him. What must that feel like? And you don't have to say, have you ever felt like that? You know, you can sort of be, just put that little cushion, that little buffer in between.
Because we're all talking about Jelly, aren't we, instead, and not yourself. So it's just better.
Yeah, and it can help us think about other people and how we treat other people too.
Which is so important to learn, isn't it, for children?
Definitely. Empathy is so important, and we're only going to become a kinder, nicer, more inclusive society if we think about how other people feel. And those feelings, we all share them, whatever colour, whatever our background. And, you know, whether you're a jelly or a dragon or a cucumber, those feelings are recognisable. So a sad feeling is the same whoever and whatever you are. Feeling sad feels the same, or feeling delighted feels the same. Doesn't matter what situation brought it about, the feeling and the way it makes you feel on the inside and on the outside and how you carry yourself is the same. And that's the amazing thing about books. It's just wonderful. You can see them all laid bare.
What are your future projects? What have you got coming up?
Oh, I have...
That you can talk about, some might be secret.
Yeah, so last year during lockdown, my first chapter book came out, which was Do Not Disturb the Dragons.
Oh, fantastic. Is that your first chapter book?
Yes, it came out bang in the middle of lockdown, and it's really, it's sort of designed for reading in either in class or at bedtime. So the chapters are nice and short, but they always leave you wanting more. They're sort of very active. It's about Princess Grace and her sister Portia. They live in this magical realm of Wondermere. And all Grace wants to do, she's a princess, but she wants to be a knight. But there are lots of silly rules in this kingdom, and she has to obey them all, such as don't wear armour, don't leave the castle, don't ride a unicorn. And of course, she wants to do all this stuff. So book two comes out in 2021, which is really exciting. The illustrations are just hilarious. Sharon Davey has done them and they're wonderful. So that's this year. I've got 1, 2, 3, Do the Shark comes out, which is the follow-up to 1, 2, 3, Do the Dinosaur, which is really all about making stories physically very active. So it's full of actions. So, you know, you've got to make your hands into a fin and you dive and you swim and you boogie and stuff like that. I've got a vehicle book coming out in, I think it comes out in September. It's called Red Lorry, Yellow Lorry.
Oh, I can't say that quickly.
You can't. And it's, I just love language and I've always loved Red Lorry, Yellow Lorry. Although I think it's coming out in America too, and they're calling it Red Truck, Yellow Truck, which isn't
right.
It's twisty, but it's still fun, but it's lovely. It's illustrated by Jez Tuya and it's with Anderson Press and it's just full of vehicles. So if you're a vehicle loving tot, you're going to love it. And his vehicles, even though they are vehicles, they don't have eyes or anything like that. They're so full of character and colour and they're all driven by dogs. So they're full of these dogs and there's loads of funny stuff going on in the background and it's brill. And then I think, was it last year or the year before, I did a lovely book with Walker and Bryony Mae Smith, who's the most phenomenal illustrator. I did a book called Tooth Fairy in Training. Witch in Training comes out this Halloween.
Wow, you've been so busy.
I am busy. I love it. I'm always busy. But this, see, I have all these ideas. So there's always sort of something else coming out. And I like having something to work on as well. So I'd get fed up if I only had one book a year. I need lots going on. And then I've got loads more coming out next year as well. Everything's kind of ticking along busily. And I'm always thinking of, right, what am I writing next? What's the next thing going to be? What's the best thing I've never yet written?
And going back to your very first publication, did you actually go to the go and pick up your first publication and have that memory of holding your very first book?
Yeah, it's unreal do you know what? I've done over 40 books now. It never goes away. It always feels ridiculous. There's some mornings when I'll wake up, you know, when you have like some kind of phenomenally deep sleep and you wake up and just those first initial moments of waking, like the really, really brief, you're kind of like, who am I? Where am I? What is everything?
Every day.
Yeah. There's this amazing one where it's almost like you've sort of had an Etch-a-Sketch restart overnight where everything's been shaken up and you're a complete blank canvas and you wake up and I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm actually a published author. I can't believe it. And it feels like that. Every time your next book sort of arrives in the post, this sort of, you know, amazing advanced copy, it feels ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Such an achievement. What an accomplishment.
It's mad just to have this thing with your name on the front. It's mad. It's absolutely mad. I can't believe it. I look back to being that little girl who was filling these notepads in with squiggles. If I could have, you know, sort of time traveled back and said, you're going to do it, you know, you could have knocked me down with a feather, even though I was full of positivity and hope, but it's insane.
There's a story in there somewhere, write it down.
Yeah, maybe there is.
I'm trouble going back.
I'll put it in the ideas shop.
Thanks for listening. We're now available on all the major podcast platforms. Just search for Hull Libraries. So if you enjoyed this podcast, you can get all of the latest episodes as soon as they're out. In the meantime, if you want to check out any of our amazing services at the Hull Libraries, please check out the website hcndel.co.uk/libraries or any of our social media channels. Thanks for listening and see you next time.